Welcome to the latest edition of the French Church Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. This week I'm joined by my colleague at FrenchChurch.com, Mike Neff, as well as Justin Allgaier, who enters this weekend's Xfinity Series cutoff race needing to either win or make up 12 points on the cut line to advance to continue battling for a championship at Homestead. But before we get started, I wanted to remind you on how you can sign up for the podcast every single week. Subscribe to the French Edge Podcast on iTunes and you'll get it sent straight to your smartphone once it's published. And once you do, be sure to stop by iTunes and leave us a review, as 5-star ratings helps us out tremendously. Now, just a little disclosure before we get into the podcast. We recorded the body of this podcast prior to NASCAR dropping the hammer on Kevin Harvick's team on Wednesday for altering its spoiler at Texas, meaning Harvick's win was encumbered, and he's now just 3 points above the cut line heading into ISM Raceway this weekend. Regardless, there are a lot of interesting topics brought up in this podcast, so let's kick it off with Justin Allgaier. All right, Justin, kind of a crazy race this past Saturday at Texas. Whole bunch of wrecks, fuel mileage coming into factor at the end. Just pure chaos. But overall, take us through your weekend.
You know, our weekend went really good. You know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, obviously, I would have loved to have won and not had to worry about going to Phoenix and happen to win or happen to score as many points as we do. But on the flip side of it, you know, we unloaded off the truck. We had speed early. You know, we were able to kind of manage our way through the course of the race and really feel like we were a car that was capable of running up front. You know, and I think that the tire definitely threw a lot of teams, a lot of drivers for a loop. It was really hard to kind of manage, you know, the grip level of the Xfinity Series car. I know that, you know, the tire was predominantly changed for the Cup Series side. And so that always becomes the challenge, right, is you know, kind of going through that particular situation. But the end of the race, you know, it came down. We were looking like we had a shot at maybe either a first or a second, and then that caution came out, and we decided to pit, which you know, even now I still think was the right call. You know, how are you going to know that, and unfortunately the races are going to go like they did and be in that particular situation where the last few laps were basically run under caution. So a little bit disappointing on that front, but still, you know, a good solid weekend. And you know, we were able to really kind of put ourselves in the best possible position we could. And unfortunately, it just didn't work out the way we wanted it to.
Now, how hard is the new reconfigured track at Texas?
You know, it's kind of multifold. You know, I think that number one, I think, you know, the turn one area is extremely challenging because, you know, at the end of the day, you're kind of putting yourself in kind of a weird spot, to be honest with you. You know, you're trying to be as fast as you can be. You know, you're looking at, you know, the way the racetrack, it's kind of hard to explain because the way the racetrack is shaped, you know, you feel like you're going to be fine, especially turn three and four. You go through there and you're all but wide open. And so you get down to turn one and two and you're like, okay, I'm going to run the same speed. And when you get there, you realize really, really quickly that that's not an option, you know? And so, you know, for us, it was kind of finding that balance of really, you know, understanding what kind of speed you could carry through turn one and two through three and four and kind of, you know, just how everything played out. And so in the race, you know, one of the things that we saw was, I mean, you know, guys were getting loose. They were crashing. Guys were really struggling with how to navigate the passes. And really that was no different than three and four. Just the difference being is that one and two was quite a bit slower. You were on the max edge of grip just kind of by yourself. And three and four was more so when you were around other cars and kind of battling that out. So, you know, it was extremely challenging. It's one of those places that when it's going your way and your car is as good as it can be, you still don't necessarily feel like you're in complete control. You know, you always feel like you're a little bit on edge and you're always struggling just a little bit. I think that makes a really, really tough weekend for everybody.
Now, welcoming Mike Neff. Neff, you got anything for Justin?
Yeah, man. First of all, welcome to the podcast. We appreciate you being on. I'm kind of curious about the feel of a tire. And you talk about how you're going in and you can feel your grip level. Is that something more through your hands and how it comes, it reacts through the steering wheel, or is it more of your butt and how you feel the entire car moving?
Well, I think it's kind of multifold. You know, I think that especially nowadays, as a lot more drivers are coming up with, you know, a simulator background or more digital or screen time style of driving. You know, I think there's three main components to any type of racing, and that's what you feel in your body, as you mentioned, your butt, you know, where your butt is kind of sitting in the seat, it's kind of grounded to the car. I think that, you know, that is something that we use a lot, whether the car is you know, feels like it has grip, you know, kind of where the car is at yaw-wise, and being sideways, that gets feel, you know, that feel gets put through your butt. Also, too, you know, your hands, you're feeling a lot through your hands, whether your hands have a lot of pressure on them, you know, whether you're really turned into the steering wheel, or if the steering wheel is light, you know that you're not quite as gripped up as you are if your hands are heavy. And then last but not least, the one for me that's interesting is visual. And that this is where a lot of the sim racers come into play. The visual side of things is something that I don't think we really understood for a long time, and I feel like as we go farther and farther, you know, it's definitely changing. But you know, it's something that I think all of us are kind of battling is that feel. How do you really understand what you're feeling based on the visual side of things? That becomes a big challenge. So. You know, from my standpoint, you got to have all three of those in tune and be perfect, or you're going to really struggle.
Hmm. Right on. And my other question was going to be from the dirt background side of things. I've noticed more and more, and we've all noticed that more and more guys' path to NASCAR is now going through dirt. And I think it comes from having to adjust and find speed as the track changes. Having the dirt background that you do you feel like that's part of what has made you so good at the sport, is it that you can feel what the track feedback is giving you and kind of go find some speed that maybe guys from an asphalt background don't?
Oh, absolutely. And I think too, I think, you know, something that's interesting, I think you have to have both sides of it, right? I think that the asphalt side of things really teaches you consistency and hitting a distinct line over and over and over again. You know, that's a big deal. On the dirt side, though, as you mentioned, you know, it's all about moving around and constantly searching for that grip level where your car feels the most comfortable or the most happy. You know, I think that one of the reasons why a lot of dirt guys are extremely successful on the NASCAR ranks is because, you know, being locked into one lane, especially with as aerosensitive as our cars, you know, are nowadays, I think that, you know, it definitely puts it on us to be able to move around and to learn and to try to help ourselves versus, you know, just trying to make a change to the car. Because let's be honest, you know, anymore, our cars, the parity is so close that our cars are pretty much maxed out. And you know, so you're, yes, there are changes to be made. Yes, you can always make yourself better. But I think from a driver's standpoint, you know, you definitely have to really be careful not to complain about your car in some aspects, and really just work on trying to do a better job of finding a lane or a style that makes your car the best. So, you know, I think that it's, again, I think it's multifold. I think you know, you've got to have a little bit of both in you. You've got to be good on both, and that makes a big difference. You know, I think we're seeing it more and more. A guy like Kyle Larson, you know, when he's able to move around and search, he's absolutely incredible. When you're locked into a single lane, I'm not saying that he's not good in that situation, but you know, the domination that we've seen him be able to accomplish has been on places where, you know, he's able to move and able to do things the way that he wants to do them. And I think that you know, that's been an interesting part of all of this.
Now, cool.
another dirt guy, Christopher Bell. Justin, you and Christopher Bell both outside the, you know, the championship four right now. You're 12 points out going into Phoenix, which is the cutoff race. What's your mindset?
My mindset is we got two races left and two good racetracks for us that I feel like we can go win at. So, you know, on that front, I'm looking at it as that we need to go try to win. On the flip side of it, though, you know, 12 points is 12 points. You know, and that's not to say that 12 points is going to be easy to gain by any means, because we saw it at Texas, we saw it at Kansas. The guys that are in the points, they're scoring points on the stages. They're scoring points at the end of the race. They're putting themselves in position to be there at the end. So just making up 12 points is going to be a challenge. But on the flip side of that, I'm going to Phoenix, which is by far one of my best racetracks on the schedule. Somebody today told me that I think in the last seven races there, I've had one finish outside the top four.
Nice.
So, I mean, that's really cool to me. You know, so that makes me excited to go there. That makes me pumped up to go there. But as we know with any of these places, I mean, look at last week. Who would have thought that Christopher, you know, had his issue on lap one and then got turned around late in the race? I look at my Kansas. Who'd have thought that we'd have crashed on lap one and not been able to finish? You know, I look at these playoffs and I go, man, the craziness has ensued. So first and foremost, when we go, we need to not be crazy or not get caught up in the crazy. And then furthermore, you know, I think if we can do that, I think we put ourselves in a good position to go there and hopefully try to go win.
This might be a dumb question, but when you look at 2018 as a whole, five wins, a lot of success, do you kind of have to pinch yourself sometimes at how well the season has gone for you?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. No questions asked. You know, I'll be honest with you. This has by far been one of the best seasons of my career. Not from a winning standpoint, just from an enjoyment standpoint. You know, we've done everything that I could have asked to have done. You know, it's been fantastic. And I wouldn't change that part of it for anything. So, you know, it's been great. My hope is that we're going to go to Phoenix and make our way to Homestead and go to Homestead and have a shot at winning the championship. But you know what, either way, this season has for sure been a success and I wouldn't change it for anything.
Now, if you got a final question before we get Justin out of here.
Yeah. My last one was if you could just expound on your relationship with Brandt. I mean, there's partnerships of drivers and sponsors that we've seen that have carried on through the sport forever. But I just feel like it being around you and knowing Rick and the family, and it's funny I use family in that description because that's what I see out of you guys, is that I feel like Brandt and you have one of the most amazing sponsor driver partnerships of anybody that's ever run in the sport. And can you just give us a feel of what they have meant to your career?
Well, absolutely. You know, when I look at the sport, you know, I think there's been some iconic names that you associate synonymously with drivers, right? Whether that's Dale Earnhardt and Jim Goodrich, or you know, Denny Hamlin and FedEx, or, you know, there's so many that you just look back at and over time and you say, man, that was cool. You know, the relationship that they had was really fantastic. But what I love about the relationship that I've been lucky enough to have with the folks at Brandt Professional Agriculture is how often do you see the CEO and his wife and his daughter, you know, out on the grid and at the racetrack and being a part of it and you know, really that whole package and not just Rick and his family, but the whole organization, you know, whether that's the employees, the board members, the customers, it doesn't matter. You know, their entire group has been absolutely incredible to work with, you know, to be at the racetrack every week and to be able to represent a brand like that, not only here in America, but, you know, I get to do it overseas as well. I went to Spain earlier this year and took a group of their customers to a Formula One race, hung out with them there. I've been fortunate enough to race with my buddy Miguel Peludo down in Brazil with brand on the car as well down there, you know. So just to be associated with such a fantastic company, and to get to meet so many great people and travel all of the places that we do, and to see their passion for it, you know, that's the thing that I love, is they're as passionate about the sport of auto racing and NASCAR as I am, and that's a big deal. And so, you know, for me, I want to go to the racetrack and run good for myself and you know, win races and you know, be in that situation in on one aspect. But on the flip side of it, I want to go there and run well for them too and be a part of it. So it's truly been incredible. Whether that lasts the rest of my career or if it were to end today, that's been, you know, a relationship that has been just something that you can only dream of. And to have them from my hometown, basically, you know, I grew up just outside of Springfield, Illinois. Rick grew up just outside of Springfield, Illinois, the other side of town. Their main office, their world headquarters is right there in Springfield. And so to be able to represent a company from home and its employees, it's truly special.
Well, that's a cool partnership, Justin. And this was cool. So thanks for coming on, and we wish you luck this weekend in Phoenix in making the Final Four.
Sounds great, guys. Thank you, as always, for having me on. And hopefully we'll see you guys at the racetrack this weekend.
Sounds good.
Right on.
Neff, I know you and Justin go back a while. This has been a great year for him. So just curious, you know, we it'd be cool to see him get in.
Oh, completely agree. And it's one of those things that I've always felt like Justin has not. I mean, he's had a good shake as far as getting to be in JRM Xfinity stuff, but I felt like he never was recognized for what he did in Cup. And you look at the H. Scott stuff that he got put out of to put Bowyer into for the year so Bowyer could go run before he went to SHR, and Justin ran. And I feel like he never got a shot in good equipment.
Nope.
And the fact that he's in a development or a support organization to Hendrick, I really wish at some point they would give him a shot. And it's one of those deals that I would love to see the rules change so that NASCAR can let some of these teams run extra cars on race weekends. They're limited to four, and they can run a fifth car if it's for a rookie. But I would love to see him get to run a fifth car for 10 or 12 races for anybody. And that way, to see Justin go out and run a Cup race in Hendrick equipment, I think I would love to see that, because I don't think his talent is appreciated for what it truly is when you look at what he did in subpar equipment when he did have a Cup shot.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, back when Allgaier came in about 10 years ago, is, you know, he made his full-time debut in it for Penske in 2009. I didn't know what to think, but, you know, he got a win in 2010, 11, and 12 for whether it was, what, Turner Scott or Penske. But this year's been his breakout year, and going to Junior Motorsports was a big factor in his turnaround, you know, his career turnaround with Brandt, which he was talking about. So, man, I really think it'd be a shame if he misses the Final Four. He made it the past 2 years, you know, not having a stellar year like this year. Yep. And I feel like if he can make it to Miami, he's my pick. Even if he and Bell, which it's not very likely that both of them will make it now, but if him and Bell were to make it, I would still, I think, put Allgaier over Bell. He just had that, you know, that good of a year. He went out and, you know, Indy was a different rules package, but he won in Indy. He's won all these places that he's always dreamt of winning at. And it's just cool when he's having a great year and you know, appreciate him for having him on this weekend or this week. So yeah, it'll be interesting. He's won at Phoenix before, but I guess we'll have to see how it plays out in F. But before we get any further, let's talk Texas. All right, Neff, just like we talked to Justin, wild Xfinity race. You know, Cole Custer, though, former podcast guest, assured himself a spot in the championship four at race at Miami. But man, that race was insane.
I just haven't figured out why we keep wrecking to start these things. I'd understand if it was like Atlanta, but we've had the whole season. And all of a sudden, we get to the end of the year, and we're killing ourselves before we ever make a lap. So, I agree. It was an amazing race. I love last lap passes. They always make things more exciting. And, yeah, Cole Custer is Cole Custer's interesting. I mean, I feel like he's got a lot of talent. And he's coming out of his shell more and more as he ages and does this stuff a little bit more. But I think he's one of those guys that could be a sneaky superstar in his sport and end up being around and winning a lot of races over his career.
Yeah, I mean, and I agree with you. His personality, he's always been kind of a little bit of, you know, quirky, I would call it. Obviously, the youngest truck winner in history at 15 years old, I think he was, at New Hampshire. And he can wheel a car. And if he's going to Homestead, we know what he did at Homestead last year, leading 180 laps, and, you know, at times having a half a lap lead.
Yeah.
So the competition would be in for a real eye-opener, I guess you could call it, but, you know, in a couple weeks. But, man, you mentioned the first lap incident, and, yeah, it's very rare that we ever see one, yet alone two, in back-to-back races. And, man, it's really hurt Christopher Bell.
Yeah, I mean, that has been the one that has really paid the price out of this deal. I thought Bell was the surefire favorite for winning this championship and going to be the, you know, the one that everybody was going to have to deal with, especially at Homestead. And now he's got himself in a hole that we don't know if he's going to be one of the ones running at Homestead.
Yeah, he came into the round, I think, 33 points to the good. And going into Phoenix, he's, what, I think 37 out. So that's a 70-point swing in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Back-to-back finishes of 30th or worse. He has the speed to win for sure. I could see him going straight up and winning at Phoenix and, you know, going to Homestead, dominating that race, winning the championship. But he's making it tough on himself. So just very, very interesting with how his playoffs have gone. He dominated the first round, winning two of the races. Now the second round crashes out in the first two. So very wild week in general for the Xfinity Series at Texas. Now 13 cautions at Texas. But drivers were able to pass one another. It's something we didn't really see as much, I would say, in the Cup Series. Enough, obviously, you know, Texas is newly reconfigured 2 years now. But why do you think it suits the Xfinity car so much better than Cup, at least in my opinion?
I mean, I think we saw it in all three series this weekend that the reconfiguration has definitely made a difference. And I like it. It's one of those things that they, you know, for lack of a, it's not the same, but it throws back to Darlington, where you've got two completely different ends of the racetrack. And in order to be really fast, you can't compromise both of them and be fast. So you have to pick end three and four is where the speed is. So you have to force yourself to really drive it through one and two in order to have that speed and really make the passes in three and four. And I agree. It seems like for whatever reason, the Xfinity cars have had the best races there so far since the reconfiguration. But I think the tires played into it this time too. It seemed like, and I loved it. You know, some of the guys were complaining that they couldn't feel the tire and they weren't sure about, you know, about where it was at any point in the runs and even after they did some cycles and things like that. But I liked that. I mean, I think that's what we need in the sport is when you go into the corner, having to slow down and having to use the brakes to be able to make the corners. And you know, I know we're focused more on Xfinity, but that last restart in a Cup race, Kevin Harvick has the largest cojones in a sport because he went in there, had not been on the outside all day, and sailed it at least two, if not three cars deeper than anybody had all day on the outside. And it stuck. And I mean, he could have, if it didn't, he was going to look like an idiot because that thing, if it didn't stick, it was going right to the wall and getting destroyed. But it went through and he got the win. And I thought that was my highlight of the whole weekend was that last restart, Harvick going in there totally unknown into that corner on the outside and just having more guts than anybody else did. And he earned the win by doing it. But, yeah it's I like that they did it. I would love to see some more of these tracks do it, although I would rather see more of these mile and a halfers just shrink and bring the back stretches closer to the front stretch and make themselves three quarters or seven eighths of a mile.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. But yeah, I mean, that turn one at Texas, man, that is a tricky corner. And you know, and the NASCAR and NBC folks were talking about it all weekend, how challenging it is. Dale Earnhardt Jr. obviously racing it last year, had a lot of insight on it. And Jeff Byrne even said that he thinks it's the trickiest track on the circuit right now. And I don't know if I'd go to that level, but if, you know, we're not drivers, never really driven a car, you know, a race car. So, what opinion is ours? But, I thought that Xfinity race was the perfect race. It had a little bit of everything, you know, had cautions, 13, which, you know, like I said, it's quite a few, but, had fuel mileage at the end, which was cool, and you had comers and goers, and just, I thought that was the perfect race for you know, especially a reconfigured track. And, you know, someone who's really surprised me, and really surprised me at Texas, is Tyler Reddick. I know we're hitting on Xfinity a lot here to start off, but, man, when he went into the playoffs, I thought he'd be out in the second round, this round. But right now, he's got the most points, you know, going for him, and I mean, he's in a real good shot of making it to Homestead.
Yeah, I agree, and we keep seeing it, and it's taken years for it to come around. But dirt track guys,
yeah,
Reddick's another one of these dirt track guys that grew up on dirt tracks and learns to move the car around and find the fast line during the event. And I really think that going forward, we are going to see more and more guys coming out of the dirt ranks to go into this, because, and especially at the cup level, when we're starting to deal with all these, the ideas of the reduced horsepower and higher drag, you're going to have to find fast lines, and you're going to have a lot of time spent searching around. So I feel like we're going to get more dirt guys, but yeah, I agree with Reddick. I was kind of in with you. I didn't think he'd make the final four. I thought he'd be out in this round, but he definitely looks like he has got the momentum, and I guess we'll find out after Phoenix.
Yeah, because really there was five guys this year that I looked at. Is kind of like, you know, there's the big three in Cup, but there was the big five in Xfinity, and I wouldn't call them big five, but, you know, in layman's terms, I'm going to say it right now, they're the big five. Yeah, Elliott Sadler, Hemric, Allgaier, Custer, and Bell. And, you know, right now, two of those five are going to miss the round, and obviously only four can make the, you know, championship race. But yep. Reddick was not among those five all year long, really, in my personal opinion. Since the playoffs, he's always been fast. He's always had speed, but he's never been able to, I shouldn't say never been able to, but he made a lot of mistakes, if we're going to be honest, whether it was getting the wall, like Chicago comes to mind. Led a lot of the early, I think he led the whole stage one, and then crashed in stage two, got a speeding penalty, got put in the back, got involved in an incident. You know, mistakes just kind of piled up. So, I mean, he's also good at Homestead. He won the pole there last year in Xfinity. I think he finished second in the race, thinking off the top of my head. But, I mean, like you said, dirt racing. I could definitely see him going to Homestead and being a force to be reckoned with. But we had, you know, Justin on the show. Right now the top four are Custer, Reddick, Elliott Sadler, Daniel Hemric. Do you think it's going to change after Phoenix?
It's going to be hard to say. I mean, if anything can happen, we could get a surprise winner. But if anybody's going to do it, it's Bell. I mean, obviously Bell's got what it takes to get around Phoenix fast, and I could see him jumping up in there and knocking one of those guys out. But other than that, yeah, I think we're pretty locked in with what we got.
Interesting. So Bell and Allgaier are missing the final four, combined to have 11 wins.
Yeah.
Insane. But moving right along here, going to the Cup Series. Neff, you kind of hit on it earlier. Kevin Harvick laid it to the competition this past weekend, sweeping all three stages. You know, this team's been fast all season long, if we're going to be blunt. But sure. Let's talk about the playoffs specifically. You know, we talked about last week with Tom Bowles, Zach Tanzaretti, our colleagues at Front Stretch, how they couldn't put the full race together in the playoffs. Well, Neff, they did that in a big way.
I mean, that's been their MO all year. They have been the fastest car in the Cup Series 85% to 90% of the races that we've had, and they've got 8 wins, which is not even a quarter of them. So the rest of them means that they haven't put it together, and it's a matter of pit road penalties, whether it's speeding or flat tires or a lug nut getting caught in a jack or knocking a valve stem off or whatever it is. There are constant problems that they self-inflict that cost them these wins. And there's nothing that can be done other than focus. And, you know, you try. It's not like these guys aren't trying. And that's the part that is so difficult in this deal, is that it's not like the pit crew goes out there and goes, well, what should we screw up this week? You know, they go out there. They're one of the best pit crews in the sport, probably top 8. And it just invariably something goofy happens. And I don't, you know, if nothing goofy happens, Harvick will win the next 2 races in dominating fashion. We know that he owns Phoenix. I would love to see Kurt Busch go down there and win it just because I think it'd be a great story. But in reality, I think it's going to be Harvick winning at Phoenix. You're going to have Busch and somebody go through. I'm still not convinced Truex is not going to shoot themselves in the foot one more time. And then we go to Homestead. And I'll be curious if we go to Homestead with even 2 SHR cars, will they mix up Harvick's pit crew? Because it's one thing, like with Logano, where they brought somebody over from the 12 that's a jack man that also has some tire carrying experience, and that has made them faster. But they've had 4 races before, or 3 races before the championship, 4 races total, to work together. Mixing up a pit crew for a one-off race to win the championship is risky at best.
I agree.
And I feel like they really need to just stand pat with what they've got, and it comes down to execution. And if they execute, there's nobody that's going to beat them.
Yeah, and the first thing he echoed on the radio after his win was execution. And, you know, that's what they did. They finally put a full race together in the playoffs. That was his 45th career win, 22nd in the last 5 years since joining Storehouse Racing. Now, if he could have, like, if everything went right, if the pit crew went right, if he didn't make speeding, you know, mistakes on the pit road or whatnot, they could have 40, 45 wins in the last 5 years or so. I mean, that's been that. They've had that much speed.
And we've talked about it before. That's why it irritates the crap out of me. They call him the closer.
Yeah.
Because he does it. And that's, bottom line, look at the stats. He's got 53 or 54 second place finishes and 45 wins. If you're the closer, you don't come up first loser more than you win.
Right.
And that's, bottom line is, he's come up second more times than he's won. Look at Logano. Look at Larson. Look at Jimmy Johnson. Any of these other guys that are quote-unquote winners, you know, whether they've got 10 wins or 85 wins, they've got more wins than they've got second places. Harvick is more of an anomaly, having more seconds than wins, than most of the other elite drivers in the sport. And there's no question that Harvick is one of the top 5 drivers in the sport, and has been for years. But it just, it drives me nuts they call him a closer, because the simple fact of the matter is he's not.
Yeah, that's a good point. When I look at his season as a whole, 8 wins, which leads the series, 21 top 5s, only 2 in the playoffs, though, and 27 top 10s. He's led almost 2,000 laps, 1,859. Now, he is the favorite, though, right? Like, we've talked about this all year, him versus Kyle Busch versus Truex or whomever. They've got to be the favorite, though, right, going to Homestead, because he's probably going to win Phoenix this weekend, if we're going to be honest. And then I think he's won there 9 times in the past. And then he's won at Homestead before, and this is his 4th time fighting for a championship in 5 years within the number 4 car.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any question that they have been the favorite since Daytona started. Daytona ended. Let's put it that way. At Daytona, the Penske teams were really the ones to beat. But from Atlanta on, it's been the Ford team. I mean, they have been unquestionably the best team in the sport. And, you know, even on bad weekends, they're still running in the top 10. I mean, other teams that have bad weekends finish 25th to 35th. These guys have a bad weekend, and they finish 7th. You know, most of their finishes that have been double-digit outside of, and we talked about that a couple shows ago when he screwed up and wrecked himself at California.
Yeah, I mean...
Outside of wrecking the car, they are a top 10 car every single week and legitimately probably top 5. And it's... Kyle Busch has not had the runs in the last few weeks that I expected. He's been fast. He's been up there, but it has felt like they've just been a tick off. And, you know, we all know that in this sport, everything is a tick away from finishing 10th instead of 1st. But Kyle's going to have to really step it up at Homestead if he's going to knock Harvick off.
I wouldn't even say it's just Kyle, though. I want to get back to Harvick, but I wouldn't even say it's just Kyle. It's just Toyota as a whole seems a little bit off. Even Truex, this past weekend, they both, you know, reported loose wheels, which that's obviously a mistake by the pit crew. But still, as a whole, they just don't have the speed that Harvick has right now, and that's not a good sign with only 2 races to go, one being the championship race.
Yeah, it's something that is a little surprising because Toyota spends a boatload of money and a boatload of time getting in wind tunnels on a daily basis just about to make sure that they are the best. And it seems that for whatever reason, they haven't been for most of the playoffs. So we will find out. Again, we'll see this weekend. I think is Harvick's to lose. But when we go to Homestead, it'll be the 18 in the 4, barring something surprising.
Yeah, plus they're both really good at Homestead, so that makes it that much more, you know, difficult for the other guys. But, Neff, we didn't get because you weren't on the show last week, as I mentioned earlier, but Joey Logano, man, he's on a hot streak right now. So what are your thoughts on him and his shot at the championship? Because they're definitely gaining speed.
Yeah, they're gaining speed, and they look decent on a mile and a half this past weekend, so I think they're in the Final Four, so they got to be considered. But I don't know. I feel like when we go to Homestead, they've been a little off at Homestead as long as I can remember. So I don't know that 22 team is going to have what it takes, but you never know. I mean, that's why we run the races. He's going to go down there. He's got a 1-in-4 shot. And I still cross my fingers that my dream scenario plays out, and then we never know what might happen. but if it's a straight up race, I feel like he's gonna need to catch a little lightning in a bottle to beat the 4. I feel like they'll be pretty even with the 18. I think if you see a typical number 4 deal where they win the first 2 stages and then run over an air hose or something and get penalized a lap, I think you'll see the 18 and the 22 really duke it out. And that could lead to an amazing finish similar to Chicago. I would love to see Kyle Busch and Joey Logano mano-a-mano coming down to like a 5-lap dash where they're door-to-door. Because I don't think either one of them will cut the other any slack, and I think you would end up seeing a lot of smoke and sparks and paint, and whoever's in third just might win the race.
That would be a very interesting scenario. Logano's battle for a couple championships with Penske in 2014, his pit crew kind of let him down in the championship race. He finished 4th out of the 4 championship cars. 2016, him and Carl Edwards got into it, and, you know, ended up finishing 2nd to Jimmy Johnson. Man, he's hitting his peak at the right time, though, this year. And so, I don't know. He's had a lot of speed at the mile and a half lately. Obviously won the pole at Kansas, a lot of 100 laps at Kansas, the most laps. Obviously, Martinsville doesn't, you know, transition waltz with Homestead. You can't take much from it, but he dominated there, and that's a statement. I mean, regardless if it's a short track or whatnot, but this past weekend led 54 laps at Texas, so I think that was second most behind Harvick, maybe Blaney. I don't know. I'm just talking off the top of my head, but I don't know. This team is hitting its stride right now, and that's definitely the time you want to be hitting it. But Neff, this could get a hot take from you. I'm thinking hot take alert. A lot of the talk this week's been about Eric Almirola being pissed off with Logano, claiming the 22 never gave him any room. You know, on one of the final restarts, video says otherwise that he did indeed give him quite a bit of room. You think that's just frustration from Almirola seeing a possible championship hope slipping away at Homestead?
Yep, I absolutely believe that was it, because I've honestly been surprised that Almirola hasn't come out and said after looking at the video I was mistaken, because Logano gave him all the room he could. I mean, it's a one groove racetrack and you're going side by side. How much space can he give you? But there was 2 to 3 feet between those cars. It wasn't like he was down on his door, as Eric claimed. So yeah, I feel like it's a frustration level. Not only the championship slipping away, but that race slipping away. Because I truly believe if Almirola could have ever had track position, I think he could have won that race. I think they were the one car that was as fast or faster than Harvick, and they just never got to the front of the pack to show it. But it was definite frustration, for sure. And again, that's what we want. We want that heat of the moment, out of the car, talk crap, you know, intensity. And that's what we got. And Eric doesn't pull any punches. And that's what we like in our drivers. So I give him credit for speaking his mind. But like you said, video evidence doesn't lie. And he had plenty of room to the outside. He just got a little loose going through the bottom down there. And it ended his shot and get to the front, because that's where he needed to be.
Yeah, and good driving by both of them regardless, because Logano, as soon as he felt him coming up or saw him coming up out of the, you know, his corner of his eye or whatever, went up the track. I hurt both of them, more so Almirola.
I think it was more because he got run into.
It could
be. Watched video, when he slipped up, he caught the left rear quarter on Logano. I don't think he was moving up if he hadn't had contact.
Regardless, you know, Almirola, like you mentioned, if he had track position, that's what he said. He needed track position. He never had it, really, especially late in the going. He finished eighth. So, I don't know, though. It's just, it's racing. So, I you know, Almirola out of the car, one of the nicest guys in NASCAR, truly, really great guy. But it's racing. You race hard. Logano races people hard. Look what he did to Truex last week in Martinsville. It's just, I'm sick of the complaining, Neff.
and it's the same thing that happened early this year.
And not, remember, that's not directed right at Almirola. It's just, you know, series-wise.
Yeah. Remember Kurt Busch got bent because Harvick raced him to the line for a stage win?
Yeah, Chicago.
I couldn't believe it. I was really stunned that even was a thing. I'm like, we're racing. It harkened me back to back when we used to race back to the caution. And I want to say it was Texas, but I'm not positive. But I want to say Matt Kenseth was leading. Jeff Gordon was in second. And Carl Edwards was a lap down. Or it may have been Kenseth was a lap down and Edwards was leading. One or the other. It was two Roush cars where one was leading and one was a lap down. And Gordon was in second spot. And the caution flag came out. And routinely, guys would kind of, you know, back off. Mm-hmm. And if a car was close to the lead and a lap down, they would get by. Well, Gordon didn't want whoever was a lap down to get their spot back. So Gordon goes and passes the leader on the way to the finish line to keep the car a lap down from getting ahead. And the uproar from the Roush people about the fact that he passed him under the caution. And it was like, you were laying over for so that other guy could get on the lead lap, and I didn't want him to be.
Right.
And he had every right. And again, it was racing. And it's a matter of, yeah, we have these gentleman agreements or unwritten rules or whatever they are, but guess what? When you're racing, the first guy to finish line wins, whether it's for a stage, whether it's for the race itself, whether it's for the championship. every little bit counts in this sport. And yeah, there's times when, you know, let's say there's five laps to go and you're 25th. Yeah, you probably don't need to be sailing into a corner on a guy's door. But we're talking about a late race restart where you're in the top 10 and you have a car that could potentially win. And Logano knows you've got a car that could potentially win. He had every right to pinch him down. So, yeah, suck it up. This is racing. If you're not enjoying it, go do golf.
Yeah, couldn't say it any better. But I'm just sick of it. Not Almirola, just sick of it, you know, sport-wide. Yep. Because it is racing. You're trying to beat the other guy, like you've said. Let's get on with it. But, you know, this week, going to Phoenix, obviously, we got Almirola, Paris Stewart-Haas teammates, Almirola included, and Clint Bowyer needing to win. Neff, out of those two, who would you rather have wheel in a car for you at Phoenix? And must win. Must win.
Between Busch and Almirola?
Almirola and Bowyer.
Oh, Almirola and Bowyer.
See, out of past, you know, results, past stats, I would go Bowyer. He seems to at least always be in contention, but I don't know if Bowyer can, I don't know if he can rise to the occasion under pressure. I mean, let's face it, it's a must win. He's 79 points out or something like that. Almirola's right. 57. Must win. Almirola's won two races in his career, one being 3 weeks ago at Talladega, and he's only won on plate races ever. So.
Right.
I don't see either of them winning, but, if I had to pick, I'd go Bowyer.
Well, I'll go contrary and then go Almirola. You know, I'm an Almirola fan.
Right.
But at the same time, we've seen Bowyer at Phoenix getting aggressive.
Oh yeah.
And I could see that happen. It'd be fun to see though at the end. Yeah, Bowyer and Almirola, wouldn't that be fun? Bowyer and Almirola, door-to-door, and whoever wins advances, whoever doesn't goes home. That'd be fun to watch.
It would be fun to watch. And Almirola's been good on flat tracks. I feel
like Bowyer would use him up.
Oh, I think you'd have to. You got a shot at the championship right in front of you. But, you know, Almirola's been good on flat tracks. Phoenix is sort of a flat track. He's been really good, you know, at New Hampshire this year. Probably should have won the race until, ironically enough, Bowyer had a mechanical issue late in the going. Same thing happened at Dover. That's not a flat track, but had a mechanical issue for Bowyer, and it cost Almirola a win. It could be really interesting going forward because they got the best equipment, and they have the best driver there as a teammate. So just something to look at because they both need to win. And you could even throw probably Chase Elliott in there as a possible must win, being so far out.
Right. Yeah, that's funny. I didn't think about that, too, the Bowyer aspect of Bowyer costing Almirola two wins this year,
yeah.
If not three. There's all sorts of interesting things, which is why we run these races.
Of course.
And again, I'm not a fan of playoffs, but if we have playoffs, I am a fan of the current version of playoffs more than anything else we have ever run. And I feel like I feel like this is giving us what we want every year. I feel like this year especially has rewarded those people that were good in the regular season, which is how it's supposed to. Only thing that I would like to see brought back, if we're going to tweak this thing again, which we constantly do, is I would like to see points for leading laps again. I feel like a point for leading a lap and an extra point for leading the most laps could swing some things around and could change some strategy for people on stage finishes and things like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And since we mentioned this for Xfinity, we might as well do predictions for Cup. Do you have the final four in right now going to Homestead? And that would be Harvick, Logano, Kyle Busch, and Truex? Or you mentioned you're not sold on Truex.
Not sold on Truex. I'm gonna throw out that Kurt Busch wins at Phoenix and bumps Truex out.
Interesting. See, we both had Kurt, you know, going to the final four in every round, but he's 25 out. He had a pretty good race at Texas, but gained 0 points.
I'm just saying, I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure he's been in the top 10 at Martinsville and at Texas.
Yeah, he has been.
0 points in both races. That is brutal.
Yeah, that's the point. That's what winning does for you and winning these stages does for you. And being high in, I mean, he finished, I think, fourth in the championship, the regular season championship. So he got a lot of points there. But that's what winning races does for you now. You know, Truex won 4 in the regular season compared to his 1. So there's 15 points. I mean, 25, 15, and 10-point difference. So, but I could see Kurt winning this weekend. I mean, he's won there in the past. He's had such a good, consistent year. He's already tied for his most top 10s in his career at 21. He's done it 5 times now, 3 since being at Stuart Haas in 5 years. So, very consistent. But I think it's going to be the same 4. And it'll be interesting because, you know, we've talked all year about who could be that 4th guy. Well, Logano's, you know, stepped up at Martinsville, and he's that 4th guy right now. So,
yep.
I feel like this could get another hot take from you, Neff. And this will be our final topic before getting to predictions for the weekend because we got a triple header. Jimmy Johnson and NASCAR. I feel like this could get a real good take from you. Before the race, Jimmy Johnson was sent to the back for failing pre-race inspection twice. Now, per the rule book, it says you would lose 15 minutes, I think, in final practice the following week. But would start the race from where he qualified, which I think he qualified 22nd or 23rd.
Yep.
Now, NASCAR missed that call. They owned up to it after the race. But, Neff, you can't have that in professional sports. You can't mess up when you're the sanctioning body. Because that cost him a lot at the beginning. I mean, that's track position. We talk how, you know, vital track position was earlier. That's a lot of track position.
Yeah, and I know Jimmy tried to be the diplomat and say that it was just one of many problems they had, so that, you know, he tried to play it down that wasn't the final straw for their weekend, but that killed them.
Yeah.
I mean, being that far back killed them. And I'm still trying to figure out how it happened. I mean, there's multiple people involved in officiating this sport, and there's, I don't know the logistics of the information passing from inspection to race control, but there's layers there where multiple people in inspection make a note of when you pass, and at the end of that, we count down all the people that failed 3 times, and those are the guys that go to the back, and somebody miscounted one. So unless they communicated to race control that he had missed 3 times, which is the only way that I can envision this actually happened, that inspection told race control he missed it 3 times, that's why he was back there. Because otherwise, there's too many eyes and hands in the process that kind of double check these things for it to just slip through the cracks. I mean, there are things that slip through the cracks in a sport, but that's not one of them. I mean, there's a lot of people involved in the logistics of lining up the cars and getting them ready to go to the race and who drops to the back for it to just be an oops kind of thing. So I feel like there was some major piece there that was done incorrectly in the tech end that caused it to be missed. But I guess the part that confused me was that Knaus was arguing it for what sounded like 15 or 20 minutes before the race, and they didn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
And that's the part where I would be the maddest. I mean, it's one thing that they missed the call, and yes, it happens. We're all human. It shouldn't happen at this level, especially in the playoffs, but it can. But the fact that if Knaus had the documentation and pointed it out to them for an extended period of time, that's the part that I feel like somebody somewhere had a Napoleon complex going on. And Knaus was appealing, and they were supposed to be running that up a ladder or a chain to get an ultimate decision. And somewhere up that chain, somebody was just like, screw them, no. And didn't go through the whole process properly to hear Knauss's discussion. And that's a part that I think is most disturbing of the whole deal, is that obviously Knauss had documentation to say, hey, we passed on the third try, and just somebody somewhere didn't want to hear about it. And that's the part that bothers me, is that I feel like it wasn't just so much a mistake. I feel like somebody specifically ignored it just because they wanted to, and that can't happen.
Yeah, there's no excuse for it. I mean, like I said, this is the sanctioning body, and I'm a sports fanatic, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, you name it. And I'm trying to come up with a good analogy, but you know, while you were talking, but I can't. I mean, this is, you don't see this from a sanctioning body. Hurt the competition so bad, because like you said, it killed them. Instead of starting 23rd, which they were scheduled to, they started in the low 30s. And that's a lot of track position, like we were talking about, for a team that all year hasn't showed they have speed, you know, compared to the normal. So, I mean, NASCAR, I guess, give them credit for owning up to it and saying that, you know, they made a mistake, it was miscommunication. But you can't have it. Not in professional sports, in my personal opinion. And it's just a shame. It's a shame that, because it happened once, it can happen again. Maybe not for that exact reason, but for something else. And you know damn sure that NASCAR makes sure it doesn't happen again. But the possibility is there for it to happen again. And you know, you hope not. So, just a bad deal for Jimmy Johnson, and on top of his bad year, if we're going to be, you know, honest about it. So, yeah, let's hope that doesn't happen again, because that doesn't make our sport look good.
Nope.
Not at all. So, now for moving to Phoenix here, we got triple header. We got the Truck Series, Xfinity Series, Cup Series. I think it's going to be a hell of a weekend of racing. We didn't talk much about trucks, but, you know, Justin Haley got into victory lane this past weekend. Him and Johnny Sauter are locked for the championship, GMS Racing. Who you got going to victory lane, and do you think the final four stays the same?
Who are my final four in trucks? I haven't even looked at that.
Well, right now it's Sauter, Moffitt, Haley, and Noah Gragson. Do they stay the same?
All right, well, going to Phoenix, we got 31 cars.
It's an 18-point gap from Gragson to Enfinger.
Yeah, Phoenix is a bit of a short track, though. And we know our boy Enfinger can get around on a short track.
I think it stays the same.
Yeah, it's, I feel like it'll probably stay the same, too, because I feel like Johnny Sauter is going to go out there and smoke him. And if he doesn't, it'll probably be Moffitt. So either way, it'll probably stay the same if that's the case. But I'd love to see my buddy Grant Enfinger pull it off, but nah, I think we'll stay the same. I'm with you.
And who, so you said, do you think Sauter's going to smoke him? So is that your pick?
Yeah, I'll go with Sauter. I think Sauter's throwing down the gloves to let him know that he's the baddest man on the planet and it's his championship.
And who you got for Xfinity and Cup?
Xfinity. I'm going to pick Christopher Bell because he's got his back against the wall and he needs to step it up. And I think he's going to go out there and Daniel Hemric's going to run second. That's how I feel about that. And then at the Cup level, do you want me to give you Harvick since I took the two easy ones?
Regardless, I'm taking Harvick.
Okay. Well, I'll let you take Harvick then. I'll take Kyle Busch. Let's say Kyle Busch and Harvick duel it out to the end, and one of our locked-in dudes is already there, so I'll go with Kyle Busch so that he has some momentum going in. Speaking of weird things, well, I'll let you do your picks, and then I want to hit on one more thing.
Sure, that could be your final thought. I'm also going with some, you know, not off the chart, off the radar picks here, but for trucks, I guess you could call it off the radar. Todd Gilliland, man, if this guy had any luck, it'd be bad luck. He got wrecked at Canada in the last corner by his teammate. This past weekend at Texas, ran out of fuel on the last lap while leading and finished fourth or something. I think he rebounds, goes to victory lane. And I think we're going to have Allgaier in victory lane in Xfinity. He won there last spring. I think he led 75 laps and really dominated that race. So I think he goes and gets momentum into the championship race. And unfortunately, that means Bell doesn't make the final four, which he's, you know, he's got 6 wins this year, the series leading 6 wins. Regardless, he's had a good year. And then, yeah, like I said, Harvick all the way. Every time Phoenix is on the circuit, I got Harvick all day.
It's like Jimmy Johnson in Dover.
There's 3 things certain in life: death, taxes, and Kevin Harvick winning at Phoenix. So you had a final thought here. What is that?
Yeah, I don't know how many fans heard about it, but before Texas, Carl Long had to withdraw.
Mm.
And it ended up being this obscure-ass rule that you talk about it can't really happen, and it's a shame that it happened. The deal is, if you're a full-time Cup team, there's a certain number of races during the year that you have to run a sealed engine.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, that is designed to reduce cost. And so you've got the sealed engine, you're running a handful of times, and that means it's not getting rebuilt, so you're not spending the money on it, what have you. Well, Carl started running full-time in Cup in July and has run every Cup race since they started, I want to say either Daytona or the weekend after Daytona. And he has got a bunch of starts with a sealed engine because he's a low-budget team, so they're doing everything they can to save money, so running the sealed engine was great for him. However, I want to say at Martinsville, they had one of their sealed engines blow during practice.
Yep.
And then a race or two before that, another one of their sealed engines bought the farm. So the end result was they don't have a sealed engine left. But they have more than enough starts since July with their sealed engine that it shouldn't matter as a full-time team. However, due to the fact they didn't run the first half of the year, they're still categorized as a part-time team. A part-time team, every third race has to run a sealed engine. And due to the fact that Carl hadn't run it at Martinsville or the race before, he had to run a sealed engine at Texas, but he doesn't have a sealed engine. So you have a race team that has been doing everything they can to get to the track and satisfy whatever minimal sponsors they can get, trying to bring more cars to the sport, and you're not willing to budge on the letter of the law when the theory or the principle of the law has been satisfied. And that just rubs me the wrong way. We've all seen that Carl got screwed years ago at Charlotte when he had an old, worn-out Petty engine that I think they'd been running at, like, the racing experience for a while. It was so off pace. It was ridiculous. And they teched him as the random engine after the open. And it failed because it was, like, bored out too big, but it wasn't because it was cheated up. It was because it was worn out.
Right.
And they put Carl out of the sport for years because they wanted him to pay $250,000 fine, and you're talking about a dude that's like, picking up lug nuts after races.
Yeah, he...
to save money.
He literally... I saw him at Martinsville wheeling the tires around, so... he's involved.
They are so borderline. And it just really bothered me that a guy like Carl that is truly living the dream, you know, he's not out there winning races. He's not out there competing for wins. He's out there racing Cup because he's one of 41 guys that's doing it. And to get screwed out of a chance to run a race over some nitpicky application of a rule just seemed wrong to me.
Yep. Yeah, that's a tough deal for sure. Like you said, they get by with the bare minimum. And he was out of the sport until last year in Cup anyway, and they made their return. So that is a bad deal. And it's not like he's going to go out there and win the race, you know? So even pick up a couple positions with another engine. So, and he mentioned in that Facebook post, that's where he posted that, that he won't be at the race this weekend at Phoenix or at Homestead either. So
yeah, because leasing a sealed engine is way too expensive.
But did mention that they do plan on going to two cars next year at Daytona.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that's another one of those where I'm kind of disappointed that there isn't somebody in the garage. I don't remember if he was running Chevys or whatever, but a team from his manufacturer couldn't step up and let him borrow an engine.
Right.
I mean, we saw it. I don't know how many people remember back when Brad Keselowski pushed Brian at Daytona and got him into the 500 with an old worn out engine in a Dodge. And Penske actually tried to give them a better engine to run the 500. And Brian's chassis was so outdated that the motor mounts didn't match up and they couldn't use a more modern engine.
Yeah.
But that would have been a cool deal if somebody, and again, I don't remember, I think Carl was running Chevys, that if you could have had Hendrick or Childress or somebody step up and say, here you go, man. We value you being in the sport. And because there's 38 cars in Phoenix. You've got two open spots in the field that he could have filled in if somebody would have just gave him an engine to run for a race.
Agreed. Yeah, it's a tough deal, but I know we got to get out of here. Hopefully he is back before the end of the year at Homestead, but, you know, like he said, probably not. So until next week's show where we review Phoenix, we out.
Peace out.